Hey everybody, it's David James Young here for another week of All My Friends Are in Bar Bands. Thanks so much for tuning in and checking this out. Really appreciate you being here. Got a whopper of a guest today. The almighty and incredible Joe Talbot. He is the lead singer and lyricist of Bristol band Idols, who last year released one of the most talked about and beloved albums of the year, Joy as an Act of Resistance. They brought it to Australia in January for the first time ever, and they played two incredible shows at the Oxford Art Factory and the Lansdowne, respectively. This was recorded before the show at the Oxford Art Factory, and it was a long time coming. I've been trying to set up an interview with Joe for a while, basically ever since I heard the record, and this was finally my chance to make it happen. A huge, huge thank you to Bray Wilkinson over at Inertia for helping to make this one happen, and honestly, a huge, huge thank you to Joe for his time as well. A really kind, really thoughtful person who was obviously incredibly jet-lagged and messed up, and still really took the time to chat to me and get to the crux of everything that's going on with Idols at the moment, so yeah, that was a huge one. Also, at both shows, I got a shout-out, which was very, very unexpected and very humbling and very flattering. So, a massive thank you to Joe and a big, big thank you to Idols for finally coming to Australia. I really, really hope that we get to see those guys again real soon. I want to give a shout out as well to Adam Buncher for helping with the audio editing and production for this episode and most of the episodes that you hear. He is an absolute wizard and really, really appreciate his time working on this podcast. And I want to thank you guys for sticking around and supporting the podcast. There are many ways you can do that, by the way. You can leave a review over on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever it's called now. You can rate us and review us, as I mentioned, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. You can listen to us on Stitcher, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, as I said, wherever you want. You can also spread the word over on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at BarBandsPod. You can also hit us up at BarBandsPod@gmail.com. If you want to get in touch about anything, maybe a guest or maybe a certain episode, or if you have any questions, concerns, complaints, death threats, just send them all my way, barbandspod@gmail.com. And if you would like to go the extra mile and help to support this podcast and myself financially, then you can do so by heading over to patreon.com/DavidJamesYoung. I am an independent freelancing podcaster and writer, and everything I do, there is no certainty as to whether there will be any financial gain towards it at the end, so every little bit counts and is massively, massively appreciated. So, a huge, huge thank you to Amy Gray, Blake Henequin, Chris Bowden, Eleanor Shepherd, Elliot J. O'Neill, Eloise Young, Heath Anthony, Jeremy Neal, Jonathan Elvery, Leslie Bowden, Liam Sherlaw, Matthew Lynch, Nick McCorriston, Patty Abalos, Rachel Maria Cox, Cian Vanacuti, and Tanya Taylor. If you would like to join this collective of absolutely wonderful fucking people, you can do so by going to patreon.com/DavidJamesYoung for all the bonus content, additional perks, etc., etc. I'm trying to really build it up now. Now that I have some time to do so, I really want it to be an extension of all of my work, whether that's musical or podcasting or writing or whatever else. And your support is so, so valued and so, so appreciated. All right, let's stop faffing about. Let's get into it right now. This is my chat with Joe Talbot from Idols. Hi everyone, I'm David James Young, and all my friends are in bar bands. Today, I would like to introduce you to my friend, Joe Talbot.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
I'm alright. I'm a bit stressed, but, you know, hey-ho.
True, true. How long have you been in Australia now?
week and a half.
Yeah. Have you kind of adjusted the brain, et cetera, to the world around you? I know. There's that kind of period where it's like, fuck, what day is it? Who's the president?
It's weird how quickly you go on tour and you forget what day it is. But I was more worried about jet lag and all that.
Sure.
But it was fine. There was no hassle. And the shows have been magic. People are good. Weather's better.
Brilliant.
Than at home, I mean. Not than the people. People are better than the weather.
And you've never been here before, ever?
No, never to the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, wow.
Mm.
So, yeah, I can imagine it's kind of a surreal experience to come this far and have people know all the words to all your songs and stuff like
that. It's beautiful. I love it. It's really surreal. Obviously, you get it in, like, foreign language countries, in Spain or whatnot, where you go and it takes you back. But I think just the notion of flying for, like, 22 hours to get somewhere and still feeling like you're part of a community is amazing.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And I see you've already interacted with a bit of our flora and fauna. You had the chats at your show on Melbourne the other
Absolutely,
day.
Absolutely, yeah. I met Eamon. I was really stoked to meet because I love the chats. I think their music's great. Beyond Smoko and all that, I actually really like their music. And it was great. It was an honour. And he jumped on stage. It was good.
Excellent. Yeah. You reckon there's a potential collaboration there? Maybe you guys could work together at some vicinity in the future.
Well, never say never. I haven't asked him because we're both very busy bands.
This is true.
We got our own stuff going on, but I'll definitely join him for a beer or two later in the year.
Excellent.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
So, I begin these by tracing back the initial interest in music, specifically where it changed from being something that maybe you were watching on TV, listening to on the radio, something like that, to being like, this is what I want to do. I want to sing, I want to play an instrument, I want to be in a band, etc. Like, was there kind of a switch-on moment for you, like, growing up?
Not growing up. I always saw music as, like, an intangible dream of getting involved with. I always just listened to it. I, like, constantly listened to music all my life.
Yeah.
And then I got to uni and my mate was like, do you want to DJ? I know you love music and you're always talking about it. Do you want to just like put a night on at my bar? I was like, sounds, yeah, I'll do that. And it was amazing. Like, it went really well. We were like going down to like big shows down the road and like lying and saying we had the official after party and stuff. And started having like Johnny Marr turn up and Dizzy Rascal turn up and stuff.
Yeah, wow.
Thinking they were coming to their official after party and they had to buy their own beers and whatnot. So it was good. But then I got bored and there was like a bloated part of the scene in the UK where there was bands everywhere, DJs everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's just that like cocaine moment where everything's bloated and vapid. There's nothing. Just playing other people's music. And I just wanted to, I was like, I'm going to start a band. I'm going to talk about stuff that actually matters and have fun. I was so bored of seeing bands look like they were bored.
Yeah.
Like, why be in a band if you don't enjoy it? Or if you're enjoying it, why don't you show it?
Yeah.
Like, fuck that noise, man. Like, I'm not paying £6 to watch some guy look like he wants to fucking leave. And they're always better looking than me. So I was like, fuck them, I'm going to start something. So Excellent. I did, and the rest is history.
Indeed. Where did you grow up?
All over Newport. I was born in South Wales, in Newport.
Right.
And then I moved to Bristol. Southwest, and then moved to Devon, which is where all the surfy racists are, and then moved back to Bristol for uni and stayed there. Started the band when I was 25.
So for someone who's never been to that particular area, like, how would you describe like the music scene and the music community that was around when you were first like getting into music and going to shows and stuff like that?
Well, obviously, it was at the height of indie, so like there was, actually not the height, not the best part of indie, but when there was the most
like
saturated,
the
saturated part. But Bristol's one of those places. It's a long, long history. It was where all the slaves were, massive slave trade town, where the port was. So a long history of Afro-Caribbean people, a long history of Polish people, a long history of all sorts of people. It's always been a melting pot, which is beautiful. And it means that, like, difference is celebrated in Bristol, always has been. Like, you know, not, there's never really been like a lineage of a scene. Obviously, you had trip hop that was invented there.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, the reason why trip hop was made was because there was like the dancehall sound system culture, the rave culture, drum and bass scene, and like people coming out and making amazing post-punk, like pop group and stuff.
Sure.
And trip-hop came out of all of those people getting together, because you could go to a night where there was like dancehall and post-punk at the same thing.
Yeah.
People celebrated that. And that's what trip-hop was. It was an amalgamation of culture celebrated in some of the best albums ever made.
So you didn't have any bands or play live or anything like that before Idols?
No.
Really?
I never touched a microphone.
Really?
Or a guitar or anything. Yeah.
Anything. Yeah, right. Mm. So describe that moment of the first Idols show where you are doing that for the very first time. Like, obviously, you've grown up watching other people do it, and you kind of, you know, have an idea of what they've done, like this vicarious sense of it. But I can imagine it's another thing entirely to literally just step up to the microphone and perform for the very first time.
Yeah, I was like 9 pints of Guinness deep. I was absolutely shit-faced. Like, you see photos and my glasses are right at the end of my nose, and I'm like, I think I'm Ian Curtis, and I'm not, I'm a fucking idiot. But I've always lyrically, I've gotten better, but I've always talked about the same things.
Yeah.
So I had that purpose then. I had a sense of purpose, and I had a sense of enjoyment and loving it, and never hiding that. We were terrible. We were very bad. We were not a good band. But we loved it, and people kept coming back because we loved it so much. And you can see that in our faces, so they wanted to join in and get involved. And we had very supportive friends and whatnot, and a lot of connections through DJing, so promoters would put us on first or whatever.
Yeah.
But the first gig was at the Golden Lion pub, and it was a blur, but it was a magic blur.
Yeah,
it was really good, and I was, you know, after that, I was never really nervous again.
Wow, yeah. Have you played there much since?
We've done two shows since then.
Yeah. What was it like to come back to there after all that time?
Well, we were there like every day anyway.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
we were like,
local, yeah.
Yeah, Dev actually worked there. He was a manager by the end. So we'd sometimes write upstairs, but our practice room was about a 5-minute walk down the road, so we'd chuck all our amps in these shopping trolleys and then push them down the street. And so we were there all the time. It was the hub of what, you know, we'd leave there at 6 in the morning pretty much.
Yeah, four
days a week.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
it was a beautiful home of ours. But yeah, going back there was great. We put our night on Batcave a few times since then as well.
Yeah.
But it'd be nice to go back there and do a show one day.
For sure.
It's great. I mean, it's not the same. It's not as good as it was.
Oh,
nothing ever is it?
Exactly. Exactly right. Tell me about playing outside of, like, your local area for the first time. Like, when was the first time you guys kind of, like, travelled to play shows?
Oh, it's always shit. When you're starting out, it's hard.
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, the UK is an awful place to play live. Obviously, we got great crowds and the venues. There's some beautiful venues, like the Adelphi in Hull, like loads in Bristol, the Fleece, the Louisiana. They're like amazing, like institutions of new music and new ideas. But there's no money, there's no subsidies from the government, there's no positive attitude towards creative thinking in our country. So what that means is there's loads of deflated barmen and sound engineers and deflated managers and deflated promoters that are all fucking starved of opportunity because of a shitty attitude towards new music. So playing there is whack. If you're a new band, it's dire. And you're like, you know, and this is a time when we started playing in, you go to London straight away. That's where you go.
Yeah.
I don't know what your equivalent is here, but there's not many places with opportunity.
Yeah.
And you need to kind of get on a certain level of platform so that you can start selling tickets, which means basically proverbially sucking dick. And going to London for 50 quid, which is what, like $100. So you get your petrol covered and that's it. And, you know, you get some moody promoter who doesn't even turn up half the time, and you get given advice by these shitty bands who look bored on stage, and you just you see straight through them, and you just want to fucking throw them off. But that was then, and this is now. Now there's a plethora of amazing bands, and it's not quite, it's nowhere near as bad as it used to be.
Yeah,
we
sure.
were playing with loads of fucking vapid, airy shit bands that didn't sound anything like, there was no correlation between the bands. It's just lazy promoters putting you on for the sake of it and paying you nothing and getting away with it. But now it's beautiful, it's the best. Like playing in the UK is great, but not probably not for new bands.
Yeah,
still
sure.
probably pretty weak.
Yeah,
it's just a tough, it's a tough territory. You go over the river to Europe,
yeah,
and it's sick. It's sick. You know, the French government pay bands to practice. They've got subsidies for the arts. It's stunning. They've got a much better attitude. You go there, you eat dinner with the staff, the sound engineer, everyone sits at a table and eats dinner before the show together. And you get young people, old people, you know, there's no like, you know, it's not just a certain demographic.
Yeah,
people
feel
free to come to new music, and it's magic. It's a great
thing. Amazing.
Holland, you get whole venues run by volunteers.
Wow.
I mean, what the fuck?
Right. That's mind-blowing.
It's beautiful.
When was your first tour of Europe?
Oh, crikey. I'm old, man. I don't know. I don't know. Like, maybe... I don't know when it was. When was it? Oh, we did one... We did a couple of shows in France. That was the first one. We went to Clermont-Ferrand and Bordeaux. Played at Rock School Bar Bay.
Yeah.
And some little bar in Clermont-Ferrand. And it was sick. It was really good. You know, and we thought we were the Beatles. Like, playing to, like, four people in the middle of France. But it was sick. Like that was our first ever stint. It was like literally two shows. Probably cost us an arm and a leg. Came back skint. But it was great. So, you don't forget it.
Oh, of course. What about going to the States, to North America? When did that happen?
That happened about a year and a half ago now. We got signed to Partisan, and that gave us a better connection with. A booker over there who kind of created a narrative for us to play in the right venues, not waste people's time, with good promoters to work hard for you, because that's what you need. You need someone trusted that will look after you when you, because America's a vast ocean
of course
demise, you know. It's so easy to get swallowed up and shat out, and we weren't, because we got looked after. And it's really, really hard to go over there and sell tickets. No one knows who you are. You're fucking nothing in America.
Yeah, of course.
You know, like, you're driving for 2 days just to get to the next venue. I mean, obviously you understand that in this country. It's huge with a lot of nothing in the middle. It's great. It's a good... Like, I feel like a tiny fish in a giant pond.
Yeah,
and
there's
a lot to work towards, and it makes you realise how delicate messages are. And you've got to be mindful of what you say and how you say it. You're in new land. Like, yes, the other day when we were in Invasion Day or Australian Day, whatever you want to call it. And I knew I had an opinion on it. And I, you know, like, you know, I'm staring at mostly white faces in a black land.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. What do you say? Because I have opinions, but I'm not going to start barking at people. It's not my country.
Yeah.
And I'm not more important than the people in the audience, and their opinion counts. That's not a discussion. If I come in and... So, you know, and you do that, you have that mindfulness all the time. It makes you feel small. It makes you realize how unimportant your opinion is without listening to other people's.
Mm.
So traveling around the world, coming to Australia, coming to New Zealand, coming to America, Russia, Japan, you come in and it makes you feel humble and small. And I think feeling small is one of the most important things. Keeps you on your toes and keeps you grateful for what you got, which is not a lot, but in our world, that's everything.
I'm curious as to whether your approach to a performance would change in comparison to, obviously, playing like a hometown show or something like that. You have that advantage of everyone knows who you are, everyone knows all these songs. You're going to get, you could stick your mic out at any point and you'd have like 10 guys screaming the words back at you.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, somewhere like America or North America, anywhere like that, for instance, where maybe people are just taking a punt on you. Maybe they've just, you know, seen one thing on YouTube and they're just checking it out for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of casual, kind of passerby kind of thing. Like, do you feel like as a performer you have to work in that environment a little bit harder to be like, this is why you should care, this is what we do?
No. I think the important thing is to give everything you've got every night, whether it's two people in the crowd or 2,000, whether they know your songs or not. If someone's paying money to see you, like that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like, so I don't know, like what, £5, $10. It's a lot of money to a lot of people. And you don't take it for granted. You work, like you'll see tonight, you'll see any night. I guarantee you, come back in a year and we're doing some festival and there's one person in the crowd,
yeah,
they'll get the best idol show they've ever seen. Because
yeah,
we're not about being ungrateful.
Great, yeah.
Being grateful and being gracious about the opportunities you get, whether it's a shitty show in Buttfucksville or nowhere,
yeah,
it's still important to that person who's made the effort to come. I'm never going to take that for granted, ever, in my life. And if I do, I'm not the person I was, and I'll stop.
What do you think the key difference is between, I guess, when you were first starting out as a vocalist and a performer, and where you see yourself now? Like, do you feel like you've learned to adapt and evolve and kind of change as a performer, or is it kind of just like sticking with, you know, the things that you know you're good at and kind of fine-tuning them over the course of a tour, an album cycle, or whatever have you?
I think there's different things that I've changed. The main thing about touring is that it really makes you understand, like, how to perform without performing. So, like, well, for us it is something that we want, is to be really good at being transparent. So our performance is natural. It's like the instruments and the mic and the audience don't dislocate you from your being in the moment, which means you know your parts inside out. So you're not thinking about what you're doing, you're just being.
Yeah.
That's really important for us, to be in the moment and allow the people into that moment. So you have this energy that you can't describe, really. Secondary thing is artistic language has been a massive thing for us. Developing a language, I think any art, whether it's painting or singing or playing guitar or, I don't know, dancing, it's about expression and learning an artistic language and being fluent in yourself.
Yeah.
Projecting yourself to the world and getting something back from that as a constant. So you learn about yourself and you learn about where you're going and where you're from. And then in between is that moment where you express that as a love or a hate or comedy, tragedy, whatever it is you want to do.
Yeah.
And the fluency is what I want. I want to be able to be at a point where I'm fluent in my own artistic language, where I really, truly am being transparent in that moment, which is impossible to be truly transparent because you'll always have that split second delay where you're not actually being truly in the moment because you have to voice it, express it. But that's the challenge, and that's the most beautiful thing about learning how fallible your artistic language is and how far you've got to go, because we're nowhere near ready yet. We're nowhere near as good as the bands that I love, and I like that because it means I've got something to work towards. But I'm definitely a lot more fluent in my own artistic language, and I know the boys are as well. I can speak for them on that. Like, we've learned to embrace all the faults as well as the positives in our language, and embrace what we don't like about ourselves and what we love about ourselves and put it out there. And that act of vulnerability that we learned from Joy as an act of resistance has really helped us kind of be confident in just being.
Yeah.
And just being is the most important thing for us. Just fucking smashing it.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you feel like there's been a shift in, I guess, the audience and, I guess, the response since that record came out? Because, you know, obviously it's kind of turned you guys into, you know, from being this kind of niche English band, but now with, you know, eyes all over the world, you know, people in Australia knowing who you are, going to America and having, you know, KXP and people like that knowing who you are, something like getting Rolling Stone or NME or anything like that, like seeing your name and your face and, you know, the band kind of everywhere now, as opposed to in just a couple of certain places. Like, I feel like it's really kind of stepped up with the release of this album.
Mm. Basically, what happens is we self-released the first album, Brutalism, and we were going to self-release the second album.
Yeah.
And then we got approached by Partisan, and the idea was that we didn't need any money. We saved up enough from touring and merchandise. We didn't need a label.
Yeah.
So when we were talking to labels, that were approaching us, we were like, well, we don't really need a label. So why would we sign with you? So you could take our money? Why would we do that? But they were like, one, you're fucking stupid. you definitely need our money, sunshine. But what it meant was they understood that we built our own ship. We as a touring animal didn't need a label. We're fine.
Yeah.
We can afford, like, we paid for this to come to Australia ourselves with our own money from touring touring and merchandise.
Yeah.
So we kind of, but that took years of saving and fucking having partners shout at us about where our money was going.
Yeah.
But we built that ourselves, and they were really respectful of that. What they offered was this platform to be able to have vinyl made and sent out to the rest of the world. So what happened was when we were signed, suddenly our platform was worldwide, which is something we could never have done ourselves. And that's something that we would never have appreciated before meeting Partizan and the language that they speak, which is an independent label that have a business mind, but also a creative mind that allows us to breathe. They won't fucking touch us other than look after us and be, you know, I guess a utilitarian cousin that just fucking gives us drugs now and again. So it's fantastic. But that's where the change happened. And now what we have is people being able to hear our music all over the world. Which is, I mean, obviously you get that with the internet, but it's not the same.
Yeah, sure.
People don't, there's still a merit and a currency to physically owning an album or downloading it even. It's an act of kindness and respect and it's great. And it feels magic. It does feel safe. We like come to Australia and we feel part of Sydney's community. I expect tonight we will feel like that because there are people there singing it back and giving it. And we'll give everything we have, as we always do. So like, it's insane. It's an insane thing that we never would have. Obviously we planned for it. We built this ship so that we could do this. But if you're really honest with yourself, you're like, it's never going to fucking happen.
Yeah.
So now I'm here and I'm like, holy shit.
Right.
It's great.
It's incredible. And obviously, you know, this tour and this album and this cycle has kind of taken you to all of these places, including obviously a lot of places that you've never been before. And
absolutely.
Like, I don't know if like you're the kind of person that is just like always thinking ahead, but like, are you thinking towards like the next cycle or what the next record will sound like or anything like that? Or is it kind of a matter of just like, well, we have this record and we're still, you know, pushing it out to anyone that can listen?
We're the typical band where like we're done with Joy now. We're working on album 3. We've got new ideas and we want to keep. There's no like, you know, fuck me. Why would you do this if you didn't want to keep moving forward?
Yeah, totally.
Like, it's a beautiful thing where you're able to slow down in life because you don't have to have a job, like two jobs. You know, we're now at a point where we can pay ourselves a wage and just focus on music, which means we have more time for family. Which means it just opens up this avenue of like a slower pace and a much more rigorous pace in the band life, but family life is more pleasant.
Sure.
So like we're just hungry now. We just want to keep making music and you know, like it's that thing I was saying before about our audience and being grateful. That's also like, you know, if people are paying money to hear our albums and come to our shows, that gives us money to work harder on the more music. Like, we're not going to sit around and like pat ourselves on the back when we've got work to do. People have given us money.
Damn right.
You know? Yeah. So fuck it. We've got to work for that now.
Excellent.
So we're on album 3 and we're working hard on it.
Beautiful, man.
It sounds shit. No, it doesn't. It's all right. It's all right.
Well, we'll find out.
We will. Maybe in 2025. No, it's good. I'm just having a bad day.
Well, we'll wrap it up here, mate. But before we do that, I asked this of all of my guests.
Yeah.
And now it is your turn.
Great.
I want to know about the best and worst shows that you have ever played.
Worst show was at the Star and Garter in St. Paul's in Bristol.
Okay.
There was like a homeless guy who just shouted at me the whole way through, and he threw a ball on stage and this dog just ran around on stage.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Like a tennis ball.
Yeah. Yeah. And like,
We had a couple of mates there who were like, yeah, but everyone hated it. They were there for like dubstep and reggae and shit. They didn't want to hear our stuff.
Why were you playing a dubstep?
Oh, well, it was just like our mate put an all-day festival on in the sunshine.
Right.
And they were like, hey, do you want to play? We were like, yeah. So it was awful. So bad. Like, they hated us. They hated us. The best show is a real hard one. I'm going to go on instinct. Can I say it's between two, or is that not okay?
By all means. Right,
it's between Primavera Festival, which is my favourite festival in the world. Spanish crowds are insane. I love it. And we didn't expect it to be what it was. It's 2 a.m. We thought it'd be all right. But it was huge. The crowd were, like, amazing. I had people crammed up the stairs. People couldn't get in. And it's an outdoor thing, you know. So it was insane. And it was just a beautiful moment for us where we really started to feel like taken seriously in a crowd of people that we were in, you know. That was our festival that we go to and take loads of pills, and we're now on the other side sober in the moment, and it felt beautiful. Second one, or maybe joint first, was Le Bataclan in Paris, where the shootings were. But it wasn't about that. It was about being there, and the message that we bring, I hadn't really appreciated as much before, the idea of Joy as an Act of Resistance, and because it helped me so much in my life and get over the death of my daughter and so many other things, and addiction. And I didn't realise the breadth of what our message had brought until we were in that venue and people were coming, and it was the first time they'd come to that venue since the shooting. And we were letting them in early to kind of just scope the place out and feel comfortable and safe, or as safe as it can be from trauma. And the love and the energy in that room when we played was overwhelming. It was the best energy ever. It's just, you could cut it with a knife, you know.
That's amazing.
So yeah, those two.
Beautiful.
Probably the Bataclan was number one.
Yeah.
Plus, fucking, the French are the best. I love them, and they've got the best food. Maybe. They don't have Vegemite, though.
That's true.
Nah, I bet everyone says that. Sorry, that's such a bullshit thing to say.
Oh, no, it's fine.
But you know what? I've never had it. There's some over there. I'm going to try it in a minute.
Excellent. Well, in the meantime, dear listener, Joy as an Act of Resistance is the name of the album. It is out now. It will be out still by the time that you are hearing this. And Idols are going to continue on their path of world domination. But Joe, is there anything you would like to add or plug or spruik, etc., before we get on out of here?
I'd just like to plug my gratitude for coming down and asking me interesting questions.
I appreciate that, man.
Thank you very much, brother. It's lovely to meet you.
Likewise, a pleasure. I'm David James Young, and all my friends.